Thank you, Steve. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a fairly challenging subject if you think about it. The devil, the enemy within.
What it's suggesting is that inside us, there's something bad inside us. Not just that, but it's something that would destroy us. It's an enemy, something that needs to be fought against. So when I thought about it, I thought, interesting subject, this, need to think about it. So I did what any serious, self-respecting Bible student would do. I asked ChatGPT. And what ChatGPT said, the popular view of the devil portrays him as a powerful, malevolent being who embodies evil and opposes good. So, popular view of the devil, male and bad. And there's a view of what the devil looks like, often depicted with horns, red skin, a pitchfork, and a sinister grin. The devil is seen as the ruler of hell and the tempter of souls, encouraging humans to sin. So now, according to the popular view, we know what the devil does. We know what he looks like, and we know that he's the ruler of hell, wherever hell might be, and he's the tempter of souls. So, as well as being down in hell ruling it, he's up here somewhere, encouraging humans to sin. And interesting. The image blends religious, literary, and cultural influences, especially from Christianity, but also interestingly from Islam, where the devil is commonly associated with Satan, a fallen angel who rebelled against God. So there's the popular view. And interestingly, none of it comes from the Bible. I mean, some of it's sort of been interpreted, I suppose, from the Bible, but none of it is clearly taught in the Bible. So let's have a look at what the Bible has to say. And like any serious, self-respecting Bible student, I did the responsible thing and looked at my phone. So I looked at my phone for places in the Old Testament where devil occurred. Search for devil in the whole Bible, it says. And here's the first mention, Matthew chapter 4. That's pretty surprising, isn't it? No mention at all of the devil in the Old Testament, and 36 mentions in the New. I tried devils then, and that didn't mention at all. So then I tried demon, and that's not mentioned in the Old Testament either. 32 times in the New Testament. And then I tried demons. And well, yes, that's a bit better. Three in the Old Testament and 49 in the New Testament. So it's a bit funny still, isn't it, that hardly anything at all in the Old Testament, but three mentions. Just three mentions. And when you look at it, I don't know whether you can read. So there's the three mentions in the Old Testament, Leviticus, Deuteronomy, and Psalms. Leviticus says, so they shall no more sacrifice their sacrifices to goat demons. Deuteronomy is talking about sacrificing to demons. And then Psalms, they sacrifice their sons and their daughters to the demons. So it's all about sacrificing, and it's all about what the Jews did. In particular, Leviticus 1 is what they were doing during the Exodus. And when you look, the word for demons, it's just the Hebrew word for hairy. Goat, it becomes a name for goats because goats are hairy. But where it says in Genesis, Jacob protests to Rebekah. He says, my brother is a hairy man and I'm a smooth man. That's the word. My brother is hairy. My brother is one of these things. So there isn't even a word for demon. It's just a word for, it's nearly always translated goat. So really no demons. So what it's about is the Jews during the time of the Exodus were worshipping the gods that they had learned about in Egypt. And well, there he is. There is the Egyptian goat god, with a name there that I don't know how to pronounce, so I'll leave that up to you. And apparently, this goat god was worshipped, especially in the Nile Delta, according to Wikipedia. And there's lots of archaeological evidence, including a cemetery of sacred rams, that confirms, Wikipedia says, confirms the significance of this deity in the region. And apparently, when the Greeks came to Egypt, they said, "Oh, here's Pan. It's the same as our god Pan that the Greeks worshipped." So there's the funny thing. Almost really no mentions at all of demons in the Bible. Satan, well, Satan's a bit different because Satan's just an ordinary Hebrew word. There it is. There's the story of Balaam riding his donkey. And the angel of the Lord stood in the way as his adversary, he says. That's what the word Satan means. It's just an adversary, an opponent, something that gets in the way. And you can see from there that it means adversary. I've got a thing here, haven't I? Yeah. Satan, an adversary, withstand. Adversary, one who withstands. So that's what the word Satan means. And not necessarily evil, if you think about it. Here is an angel of the Lord standing in the way as an adversary. So Satan is just someone or something that gets in the way. Most often, of course, getting in the way of God, but not always. Eight of those verses, it's talking about a human being who gets in God's way. And 14 times of the. How many times did I say? It's something like 20. Oh, yeah, 27. 27 times the word is used. 14 of them are in just two chapters of Job, where. Just in those first two chapters, Satan appears, sets the story of the book of Job, and then disappears. We never hear of him again. So there's really only three passages left that could possibly be talking about a supernatural being. And there they are. There's Psalm 109, which actually in the New Testament is quoted as talking about Judas Iscariot. Appoint a wicked man against him, the him Peter quotes as referring to Judas. So Peter has it as related as in some way to what should be done with the man who betrayed Jesus. This is a similar situation. The him in this is Joshua the high priest after the Jews had come back from Babylon. And it seems to be something about his garments. Some of the high priests had special garments. And maybe they got lost in Babylon. Either way, Joshua is being accused of something or other by someone or other. And this one, well, it says Satan in the letter of in the first book of Chronicles. But in the second book of Samuel, there's exactly the same incident, and it says the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. So, Satan in the Old Testament, there's nowhere that speaks of a fallen angel or a supernatural being. So, here's a funny thing. This is not an Old Testament subject. There's just nothing. So, here's the big question. There's the Old Testament. Old Testament, no mention of anything. In the New, lots. So, the question is, how do we get from one situation to the other, to quote Baldrick? Well, two options, I think. One is that something changed, and the other is that nothing changed. So maybe something changed. Maybe for thousands of years in Old Testament times, the devil and Satan and demons were sitting around doing nothing, no mention of them. And then all of a sudden, in New Testament times, they wake up. One possibility, I suppose, but the other possibility is just the perception. Somehow, ideas of the devil changed and became part of Jewish thought. So let's think about that second possibility a bit. Here's the first mention of Satan in the New Testament. Matthew chapter 4, Jesus said to him, whatever is tempting him, either another person, an internal voice, Jesus said to him, begone, Satan. There it is. Interestingly, here's my phone again. Here's the Greek word, satanas. And you'd expect it to be a Hebrew word, wouldn't you? As we find it in the Old Testament. But no, it's a Chaldean word of Chaldee origin, corresponding to a word that means the accuser. So that's interesting, isn't it? Because that's where Abraham came from, Ur of the Chaldees. And it's in, well, you'd say it was in Iraq or Iran these days. So that's suggesting, perhaps, that Jews picked up the idea of Satan when they were in exile in Babylon, in Persia. World History Encyclopedia. I don't know how accurate it is, but I was interested to read what it had to say about the origin of Satan. Satan, the devil, is one of the best-known characters in the Western traditions of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. So common to those three major religions, it says. Surprising about Judaism, since there's no mention of it in the Old Testament. Surprisingly, it goes on to say, this entity was a latecomer in the ancient world. Satan, as a totally evil being, is nowhere to be found in the Jewish Bible. He evolved during the height of the Persian, I don't know how to pronounce that word, Achaemenid Empire, and was adopted by Jews living under Persian rule at the time. So Jews go into exile into Assyria, into Babylon, along come the Persians and take it all over. And it's saying that at that time, Jews living in Persia picked up the idea of there being some force that is opposed to God. His formal name, Satan, derives from the Hebrew ha-satan. Ha means the, and satan means opposer or adversary. We know that because we just found that out. The name describes his eventual function as the opponent of God's creation, Greek diabolos, which is what we find in the New Testament. English devil means accuser, slanderer, again describing his role. The concept of Satan emerged over time and in phases. Isn't that interesting? It suggests that what we're reading about is not an idea in the Bible at all. It's an idea that evolved in the Persian Empire and then got incorporated in Jewish thought. So the Bible doesn't teach that the devil or Satan is a fallen angel that became an evil influence in the world. The Jews picked up the idea when they were in exile in Persia. Zoroastrianism still has a similar element. Hamid and Awa, you probably know more about this than I do. So in Zoroastrianism, there's a wise god called Ahura Mazda and an influence called Angra Mainyu. Yeah, that. Which is an evil spirit that tries to tempt humanity. So that's what Zoroastrians believe. I used to work with a Zoroastrian when I was working in Reading, but that's by the by, really. So there's still something in Persia that has a similar idea of an evil spirit that tempts humanity. And what we will see is that what happened in New Testament times was that Jesus and the writers of the New Testament were using the language of their day. So when it comes to illness, for instance, we read, verses like this from Matthew chapter 4. Jesus went throughout all Syria, and they brought him all sick people. Just notice the word, sick people that were taken with divers diseases and torments, and those that were possessed with devils, and those that were lunatic, and those that had the palsy, and he healed them. Just notice the blanket words. It begins with sick people and ends with healed them. So these were sick people. And then there's a list of the sorts of sick people. Now, this was written nearly 2,000 years ago. I mean, you know, there just wasn't the medical diagnosis of illnesses and diseases that we have these days. And so people gave illnesses names on the basis of what they looked like, what the problem was. And so it's not surprising if the New Testament uses funny language, because those are the words that people used at the time. And interestingly, you see among the list those which were lunatic. So this is English language of 400 years ago. Nobody believes in that. Lunatic means someone who is adversely influenced by the moon. You know, the monthly cycle of the moon causes people to become aggressive or irrational or unpleasant in their behaviour, is the idea of lunatic. Nobody believes that anymore, but 400 years ago, people did. And so it's a word that gets used in the translation of the Bible. Those who had the palsy comes from a French word that means paralyzed, paralysé, palsy. Again, the illness being described by its apparent symptoms. Here's someone who's paralyzed, their palsy, and Jesus heals them. Modern versions, here's two translations of a word from Matthew 17. King James Version says, "Lord, have my mercy on my son, for he is lunatic." Modern translations, ESV and NLT, both have, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he has seizures." Seizures is a funny word. It derives from the idea of something taking possession of somebody. You know, I have a seizure. It looks as though I'm not myself anymore. Something else is controlling me. Something else has seized me. That's where the word seizure comes from. So still, in the 21st century, we're using words that don't actually mean in abnormal electrical activity in the brain, which is what's really going on. We use a word that describes what one sees when somebody has a fit. And interestingly, we still do it. We still have a funny vocabulary to describe things that we don't understand. I picked up a bug, we talk about Montezuma's revenge, and even irritable bowel syndrome, which is a term that doctors use. A doctor said to me once, "Irritable bowel syndrome is a medical term that we use when we haven't got the foggiest idea what the problem is." But you see the word irritable, it implies that your bowel is bad-tempered. You know, somehow your bowel has got into a strop and it's misbehaving. So we're describing an illness that we don't understand by describing the symptoms. That's what was happening with illnesses. And it would have been quite inappropriate for the Bible to use 21st century medical language. So it used the language of its day. And pretty much the same applies to temptations. Yet another quotation from Matthew chapter 24. Jesus is led up by the Spirit, the Holy Spirit from God, which is guiding him, in order to be tempted by the devil. Clearly, this was not some evil force trying to destroy Jesus. It was part of the purpose of God in his life. No mention, of course, of a fallen angel or anything supernatural. And Jesus says to Peter, "Get behind me, Satan." So, Peter was getting in the way. He was being an adversary to Jesus, but certainly not a fallen angel. And so the devil puts it in the heart of Judas Iscariot, and the letter of James: "Submit yourselves therefore to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you." So we still haven't really got to the bottom of what this devil is that the New Testament talks about, but the Old Testament doesn't. So if this is what the Jews believed, that they'd picked up in Persia, that there was this devil thing, did Jesus try to put them right or not? Well, yes and no. I mean, he didn't come full out and have an intellectual argument with them, but he does correct the idea. This is Jesus speaking from Mark chapter 7. "From within, out of the heart of man," Jesus says, not from anybody else, not from another person. Even if somebody else is trying to persuade something you to do something wrong, in the end, it comes from inside you that leads you to agree. And not just the behavior, but the thoughts as well. Evil thoughts and immorality, theft, murder, adultery, all these evil things come from within. Here is the enemy within, and they defile a person. And they define a person as well. Jesus says it's like a tree. In our old house, we planted a apple tree. I think we thought it was a Cox's orange pippin. When it finally produced apples, they weren't Cox's orange pippins at all, because the tree had been mislabeled. We thought we were buying one tree, and actually we bought another one. Jesus talks about good trees and bad trees. You can't change the fruit of a bad tree, or you can't make a good tree produce bad fruit, because each produces the fruit that its DNA is defining. And so Jesus is saying it's what we are that matters, and what we are will determine how we behave and how we think. When it came to the Pharisees, all they thought about was the outside. They had glorified tombs of the Old Testament prophets and so on, and they whitewashed them to make them look wonderful. Inwardly, they were full of bones. And Jesus says, "You're like that. You make the outside look good, but it's the inside that matters." And letter of James, temptation comes from our own desires, which entice us and drag us away. This is the NLT. But it's interesting, the language, isn't it? It's talking temptations that they have actions that they try to trap us, they drag us away. They give birth to sinful actions. It's talking about temptations as though they were a thing, a wild animal that catches us. But of course, that's the idea behind the word a devil, isn't it? It's personalizing an abstract idea. Temptations entice us and drag us away. So the devil is defeated in the New Testament. Jesus sent out his disciples, 72 of them, and they returned, saying, "Lord, even the demons are subject to us in your name." And Jesus says, "I saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven." Which is sort of interesting because there's a verse in the Old Testament that has been interpreted as being about Satan. "How are you fallen from heaven, O day star, son of dawn? How are you cut down to the ground who laid the nations low?" But of course, Satan can't keep falling from heaven, can't fall from heaven in Isaiah 14, and then again in Luke chapter 10, and then again in the book of Revelation. This is just metaphorical language. Chapter from Isaiah is talking about the king of Babylon. And it's a metaphor for him losing his status, his power, his authority. And so the same here is happening to Satan. The what is bad within us and its results in illness are being overcome. They're being conquered by the power of the Lord Jesus Christ expressed in his disciples. And the Bible tells us that Jesus destroyed the devil, the enemy within himself. Since therefore the children share in flesh and blood, that's us, shared in our humanity, the NIV says, shared in flesh and blood, he himself likewise partook of the same things. Jesus was made like us, so that through his death he might destroy the one who has the power of death, that is the devil. So Jesus didn't sin, but there's something a lot more significant and a lot more important than that. Not only did he not sin, he conquered the desires that lead to sin. That's how he destroyed the devil in himself. His life was a victory, not a goalless draw, to use a footballing analogy. So sin, evil, and ultimately death are destroyed in the life of the Lord Jesus. For us, it's still an enemy, because the devil in himself that Jesus destroyed is still alive and kicking within us. And so Peter writes, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion. Think about the, we're talking about temptation and wanting to entice you and drag you away. Similar language. The devil prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God, James says. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. So here's a battle for us in our lives. But there's hope. James says, resist the devil and he will flee from you. The counterpoint of that is, don't resist him, and it's like inviting him into your house. So we have a choice about what we want to do. It's like a path of life. It's either a downhill path, and it's interesting looking in Romans 1 because it tells a story. It talks about the human race. Although they did not know God, they did not honour him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking and their foolish hearts were darkened. They worshipped, Paul says, they worshipped the creature rather than the creator. They worshipped material things, things that were made rather than the one who made them. And that had its results, Paul says. Therefore, God gave them up in the lusts of their hearts to impurity. And then, for this reason, God gave them up to dishonorable passions. And since they did not see fit to acknowledge God, God gave them up to a debased mind. It's describing a downward path of the human race. It's describing what happens if we turn our backs on God, don't acknowledge God in our lives. On the other hand, there's an upward path, and we see it in the life of Jesus. This is the record from Luke of the temptations that we've already seen in Matthew. Jesus is led by the Spirit into the wilderness, and three steps for Jesus as well. He's tempted to make stones into bread. His temptations go on until he's tempted to take all the power of the world into his own hands. Each of them he resists. He resists because he has a God-centered life. He resists because he's familiar with the Old Testament and he can draw on it to gain strength. And what happens then is significant, I think. When the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him. Now, quite Whether the devil was another person, I don't know, or whether it was just Jesus' thoughts within himself, I don't know. The thing is, they went away at the end. When every temptation had been dealt with, it went away because Jesus was conquering sin and the desires that lead to sin. And it was the beginning of the process that was going to lead him to a victory on the cross. So, this is a New Testament subject. We don't really learn anything much from the Old Testament. The Jews adopted a belief in devil and demons while they were in exile in Persia. Jesus taught that our actions and our thoughts come from within, not as a result of another being tempting us. Jesus and his disciples used the vocabulary of their day, but left to ourselves, our human nature will lead us away from God, but we can resist. Ultimately, thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ.